Welcome to This Grit and Grace Life. You've got questions, we've got answers. From the boardroom to the bedroom, car lines to college, single, married, or single again, we're bringing real answers to help you live and love your grit and grace life.
Welcome to This Grit and Grace Life. I'm Darlene Brock.
Hey friends, I'm Julie Bender, and welcome back.
Today we're going to do something a little bit different. I don't know if our listeners know yet, but we are putting out a book series, a kind of a guide book of sorts from several of our writers, including myself and yourself, on different things that we've dealt with. And it's going to be interactive, subject specific, and today we're going to touch on mine.
Yeah. So you had a great idea to put out the new series. You're calling it Smart Living in Small Bites. And I've had a chance to look over your book, which again, we're going to talk a little bit more about. But I am definitely excited to see, you know, what this series is going to do, because it's been our goal from the beginning to create a place where women have the opportunity to learn from other women through storytelling, but also through really practical, I did this, try this, and maybe you can find, you know, some hope and some healing and get to the next phase of your life. And so that's what they're going to be. I know there's several in the works right now, but we wanted to take an opportunity to talk about the one. And are you only doing one? I find this odd.
No, okay, I'm doing one right now. Okay. We're trying to launch the series, which, you know, include everything from anxiety to trauma to assault to self-worth to marriage. The hardest subjects and just the challenging life subjects and the women who have walked through them.
Yep. Well, your book, I guess without further ado, there's really no smooth way to get into this.
There's not.
And they saw the title of the episode, so they know that your book is When Suicide Touches Your Life. So I know personally, when you started Grit and Grace, you wanted it to be a place where women share their life struggles and their life experiences for the purpose of helping another woman who might find herself there. And what you've experienced is hard and so many, hard feels stupid to say, if I'm being honest, is hard on so many levels and in so many ways. But it's our desire to allow your story to serve someone else. And I know that that is your heart in creating this entire umbrella thing that we're doing in all of the ways. And I know that this book is an extension of that. But I'd love to hear in your own words, what led you to be willing to write this book?
It's that, Julie, because I think you can't learn anything. I mean, there are counselors, there is wisdom to be had. But walking along someone who has walked where you are, mm-hmm. who has experienced what you're experiencing, yeah. there's nothing like it. There's no sweeter empathy.
Yeah.
There's no better understanding than someone who has taken your journey. So my journey was, I lost my father to suicide. Now, do I love talking about it?
Yeah.
Do I want to go back down, you know, life's road? Not really. And as I wrote the book, it was challenging because I relived a lot that I had lived then, but I had to do it. I had to share my story in hopes that I would help someone else.
Well, I mean, I guess with that kind of in mind, I know we want our listeners to get the book, although I don't really want them to get the book, if you know what I mean.
Oh,
I don't
absolutely.
Want them to have to need the book, but it's there. But for the sake of learning from your experience, take us back to the day that you got the call that you had lost your daddy.
I was married just 3 months before I lost my daddy. Part of that, I think, is he thought I had someone to take care of me.
Yeah.
He didn't have to worry about me anymore because I was the subject of family worry. I was the one that was always running down different paths. Mm-hmm. But 3 months into my marriage, I knew he was struggling. I had talked to him, but I didn't know how much. I pick up the phone and my uncle said, "Your daddy's gone." Mm. And I'm like, "What do you mean? He's gone." Mm. "Your daddy, well, Darlene, he just took his life." You don't believe it.
Yeah.
I mean, he was struggling. He had had some work challenges. Things were changing for him. But to take your life?
Yeah.
How did you get that depressed? Mm-hmm. And you've just left us, Daddy. You've just exited this earth, and I can't call you anymore. And I hung up and sat, and that's all I could think. Mm. I can't reach my daddy anymore.
Yeah. I know we've talked about grief, and everyone experiences grief over the loss of someone or sometimes something. And there are some steps in the grieving process that may be, you know, universal. There's even, you know, the 5 steps of grief. You'd think I'd know them. I don't, but I don't really want to talk about them here. I actually want to hear you kind of share what's different about this type of grief. What are some of the emotions that you found yourself experiencing that maybe you didn't expect, or that really feels strong and jump out, that is specific to losing someone to suicide?
I went from that phone call to my husband and I loading suitcases and in the middle of the night getting in the car and heading the 400 miles trip to where my parents lived. And the family had gathered. We stopped at my father-in-law and mother-in-law's house, which was on the way. And it was like I didn't want to leave there.
Yeah.
I didn't want to go to find that this was real.
Yeah.
I wanted to hang on to my disbelief. I wanted to say, this didn't really happen. We're just taking a trip. And, you know, I actually paused at my in-law's house and made every excuse from getting back in the car and making the rest of the journey until finally I knew I cannot avoid reality. So we get to the house, and my two uncles came out, and they were like pillars, one on each side of me, walking me inside. And all I could do was look around and think, why?
Yeah.
Why did he do this? What made him do this? And I started asking questions. I looked around the room and went, why did Daddy do this? What was wrong? What was going on? What did he do?
I don't want to interrupt, but who did you find yourself asking those questions of?
My brother was there, my older brother, my mother, my younger brother, my two aunts, my two uncles.
And when you say aunt and uncle, are they his siblings?
No, they were my mom's.
Okay.
His family was relatively dysfunctional.
Okay.
So it was my mom's side of the family, okay, which were the ones who would undergird us.
Yeah.
They were the ones that would love us well as we work through this process. But Julie, here's what's funny. I started asking a boatload of questions.
Yeah.
And they all looked at me like, we don't want to answer them. And I said, you know what? Doesn't matter. Right now, today, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how he did it. It doesn't matter the circumstances around it. Daddy's gone.
Yeah.
And, you know, at that, you just start sobbing. You go from disbelief through a boatload of other emotions.
What are some of the, I don't know how to say, except maybe problems or challenges that maybe are specific to this type of loss that you experienced through the grieving process and through life shortly afterwards?
I think there's a couple that most people who are close to someone who has chosen to take their life experience. One is anger, and the other is guilt.
Yeah.
And I had those full on. The day of my daddy's funeral, I was getting dressed alone. My parents had a basement that had beds in it and stuff, and that's where my husband and I were staying, and he wasn't down there then. And I started getting dressed, and I just got more and more and more angry.
Yeah.
So I started pacing the room, yelling at my father, saying, why would you do this? How could you do this? How could you leave us like this? Mm-hmm. Stomping, saying, you will never see any children I might have. You will never know my life as it's going to be. And you chose to leave it. And, you know, right or wrong, those are real emotions.
Yeah.
They are ones that anyone who has experienced suicide has to get through. They have to walk through these feelings. And inevitably, you think, next, what could I have done? What should I have done?
Yeah.
And Julie, you know, I said I talked to my father maybe a week and a half or 2 weeks before he took his life. And he cried on the phone. Mm-hmm.
Was that normal for him?
Actually, it was. He was a sensitive man.
Yeah.
He teared up at movies. He, mm-hmm. you know, his eyes would tear up when he saw things that brought him joy or heartbreak. He had an easy laugh. His emotions were big. His friendship was amazing. He was a generous man. So emotions were not something he did not possess.
Yeah.
But these were stronger than most. These were stronger than any other time. And he, you know, he said a few things to me like, you know, I don't think your mom loves me anymore. I don't know what I'm going to do with my life. I don't know. And he had started crying and he had a bunch of I don't knows.
Yeah.
And I said, Daddy, you're going to be fine. Daddy, you're, you know, it's all good. You know, I'm in my early 20s. What do I know?
Yeah. I mean, you can't be his therapist. You were just trying to show him love and support.
Yeah. But when you, after they're dead, you go, I should have known.
Yeah.
I should have heard him. Why didn't I hear him?
Yeah.
And the guilt absolutely breaks your heart.
Now, did you have those same kind of conversations with your siblings, aunts and uncles? Were they having those type of experiences? Was it at least something you could share with them, or was that a struggle as well?
I didn't. Julie, you know me really well. Yeah. I don't share a lot of emotions. In general, mm-hmm. I'm just not that person, but it was the one person I unloaded on was my husband.
Yeah.
You know, again, we were early in our marriage and bless his heart, he didn't know what he was getting into and what he needed to do. But when I would wake up in the middle of the night sobbing or yelling or expressing everything, he would listen.
Yeah.
He would hold me. And then I had a few friends that, you know, they didn't try to answer me. They just heard.
Yeah.
If I wanted to sit down and say wonderful memories of my father, I could do that. If I wanted to sit down and say how angry I was toward him, I could do that. If I wanted to unload my guilt, I could do that. Yeah. So I had enough people, but, you know, I didn't really feel like I could share with my family because they were carrying their own.
Yeah.
And my mom had her own way of dealing with it, which was not healthy for me.
Yeah. Do you want to talk any more about that part?
Okay. Whatever you think.
Now, that seems like a big statement there, and I want to cautiously and, you know, carefully as your friend unpack that. Regular listeners of our show might remember we've had conversations about your difficult relationship with your mom. So talk to us about what that's like, losing one parent. How did that affect your relationship with your mom? How did you guys work through it or not work through it together?
You know, Julie, it's funny because you have mixed emotions. You have the, I now have to be the person in my mom's life along with my older brother that can help her through this. So my husband and I went to her house. We rearranged things. The place where my daddy took his life, which was on there at their home, we basically got rid of. We moved her bedroom. We did everything we could to try to make it where she could live there until she knew what she needed to do next.
Yeah.
And, you know, helped her with her finances, all the practical things. But whenever we would sit down and she wanted to talk about Daddy, she was grieving. She was hurting. She was angry, too. She was all of the emotions that come with it. But how she felt, then what she felt she needed to say often was to relive how she found him.
Yeah.
To walk back to repaint the image I did not want in my mind.
Yeah.
Or she would recount all of his shortcomings. And that, for me, his daughter, I couldn't go back there. I didn't want to have those conversations. I knew he was not a perfect man. I'm not a perfect woman.
Sorry.
None of us are. But nevertheless, he was everything I needed in a father. So I basically had to learn how to have my boundaries with her and know when I had to walk away from the conversation. And again, bless my husband's heart. He would see my face and know I'm either going to scream or I need to leave the room. So I would exit the room and he would sit there and let her express herself.
Unload on him.
Yeah. Unload on him. Yeah. But that's how we had to, that's how I had to work through it with her.
I'm curious, how do you think this has affected the way you and Dan parent your girls?
Good question, Julie. honesty, but at the same time, protection.
Yeah.
I will always, I said even when they were growing up that they could ask anything and I would do my best to answer them in an age-appropriate way, no matter what the conversation was. If they were curious about whatever the subject, I wanted to address it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I wanted to protect them from the hurt they didn't need to experience, mm-hmm. from the heartache of life before they had to face their own.
Yeah.
So it was a balance. I think it taught me to try to build the relationship of honesty at the same time, protect them from this very difficult world.
Yeah. I know that you named your firstborn after your dad. Talk to me about that.
You know, there was a sermon at my dad's service, which Julie was such a gift, such a gift. The pastor got up and talked about many people of the Bible, many men of the Bible, and different moments in their life, mm-hmm. moments of disgrace, moments of wrong, bad decisions, you know, just as everyone experiences, we have moments in life where we don't do what's right.
Yeah.
Or we make a decision that costs too much. And he had a phrase that continued throughout the sermon. Don't mistake the man for the moment. And I walked away from that going, I will never mistake all of my father for the one choice he made at his lowest point in life.
I love that. I know you've shared that before. And even as I was preparing for this conversation, thinking about how much we all need somebody to be willing to extend that type of grace to us, especially in our deepest, closest relationships, probably a few times.
So true. So true.
A week. Well, you mentioned the pastor who gave your father's funeral. There are some in the faith community who would imply or outright state that someone who chooses to take their life doesn't have the opportunity to go to heaven. I hate to even talk about this because it's, in our understanding of the gospel, so contrary to the whole point of Jesus' sacrifice. But talk to me about reconciling that and those kinds of feelings and potentially conversations you had with people.
You know, I am a studier and learner. And so I wanted to know more about suicide. I wanted to understand, you know, what people thought, what they were experiencing, why they made the choice. And then I wanted to get a larger perspective. Well, in that investigation, I discovered exactly that. There are whole facets of our faith. Those who really believe in Jesus, that he died and he rose again on behalf of us to give us the ultimate sacrifice. But then they state that suicide is a mortal sin.
Yeah.
It is an unpardonable sin. Mm-hmm. And because of that, you will never enter the gates of heaven. Well, you know, talk about anger. I was no longer angry at Dad. I was angry at how dare these people?
Yeah.
Even if they believe it to be true, do they not know they are turning the knife in my heart?
Yeah.
Do they not know I am being bludgeoned all over again 6, 8, 10 months later?
Right.
And it just seemed preposterous to me. But then I thought, okay, in all fairness, I need to understand why. And essentially, Julie, they go to a few texts that talk about taking your life, talk about, you know, or destroying yourself and being in basically jeopardizing yourself in your eternal security. And they refer to a few different scriptures. And I went, I read the book, or at least started reading the book, threw it across the room four or five times, then picked it up again and kept going. And what I realized is, as many of us do, we can pick choice text within the Bible and then form a whole theology about it, around it. And that's not how we live as Christians. We take the entire book. And if you took the premise that they did, well, the Bible always says that a man who gets angry is possibly in danger of hellfire punishment, okay? So anger's apparently a mortal sin, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, cut off your hand if you're going to steal or poke out your eye. I mean, there's some text that we can take in various directions, but that's not God's grace. Mm-hmm. That is not God's heart. And what I know, and I know that I know that I know that I know, is my Father is in heaven. His choice that day was a bad choice, but it did not determine how God loved him, and I am quite confident embraced him as he entered the gates.
Amen. Amen. And I know you write a little bit more about that in your book and help the reader process through some of those common things that people might say and shouldn't say, how to process, you know, those questions and some of the research that you did about suicide. Those are things that are, you know, more unpacked in this booklet, which kind of gets to that practical side of helping someone who might be facing this really difficult experience. I just want to go back to the guilt piece, because I would imagine that was probably one of the hardest emotions to deal with. And I imagine anyone who's listening to this with personal experience would love to hear you unpack that a little bit more, how you dealt with the guilt and how he or she might be able to face that in their own life.
Julie, you have to remove yourself from the responsibility. There is only one person who determined to end their life. Mm. You didn't. Yeah. Their spouse, their child, their father, their mother, no one around them determined this final outcome. And, you know, I read a lot, and something that I realized is after reading accounts of people who attempted suicide and then later started talking about it because they did not end their life, it did not work, fortunately for them, they all said, it wasn't that I thought I wanted to end my life. It was that I thought this pain would end and people would be better off without me. Hmm. And I came to realize that it was a decision Daddy made, not me, not my mom. It was one he made for that very reason, because I believe he thought we were all okay and he was making our life more challenging.
I know you talk more about that in your booklet as well, and I don't want to keep pointing back to that, but I mean, we don't have all day to unpack this, and that's part of your desire in writing that book, is to help the reader take his or her time with this incredibly deep subject. How long would you say it took you to heal?
Oh, as healing in anything, Julie, it's in layers.
Yeah.
It's not like a year later, I was just fine.
Right.
You know, yeah. But I can say for me, a year later, the anger was gone. Hmm. Disbelief. I think that actually took longer.
Yeah.
Because I would want to pick up the phone.
Yeah.
I would want to tell Daddy something was going on in my life, and I couldn't. And so that took a little bit longer. Guilt, kept coming back periodically. I wish I could. So, you know, I would say 1 year, I could talk about him. Mm. 2 years, I could talk about him without crying. Mm. 3 years, I could celebrate so many of the great memories. But you know what? There's something about hurt and heartache is when you think it's all patched up. Mm-hmm. And you think, I'm fine now.
Yeah.
I miss him, but I'm fine.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden the floodgates come back.
And that's where kind of the similarity of grief is grief. And there's no controlling it. And there's no one size fits all. I know you put this quote that you really enjoyed. I'd love to hear you talk about it a little more, and then we'll let you be done with this hard chat. Thomas More said, "Earth has no sorrow that heaven cannot heal." What does that mean to you?
My dependence then and now is God can completely heal my heart. I don't think he takes your scars away.
Yeah.
I don't think he takes the memories away, nor would you want him to, because you've learned from them. But heaven, unlike anything else in this world, heaven can do the mending, provide the hope, give you the encouragement. And merely Jesus walking alongside me through this process, yeah. I couldn't have had a better companion. Yes, my husband was amazing. I had friends that were amazing. But the only one who knew every thought and every feeling I had was the Lord. And in that, he not only comforted me, he went, "I get it. I totally get it." So I think heaven can heal any hurt, but don't expect it right away.
Yeah.
And don't expect it to be easy.
Yeah.
Because it's not.
For sure. I know I mentioned earlier that you named your daughter after him. Can you tell me about that? What's her name?
Lauren. Mm-hmm. His name was Lauren Vernon Hinkle. Yeah, that's a mouthful. And they called him Bud, much easier. But I decided there was a legacy I wanted to pass on. And, you know, his name was spelled L-O-R-E-N. Well, we spelled hers just like that.
Yeah.
And it was because he was a good, kind, loving man that, for me, he was a rock when I was growing up. And just because of the choice that he made on that day,
right,
did not deny, it did not dilute, it did not make his legacy any less. And the value of that man in my life, and not just mine, Julie, when we had that funeral, they were literally in the entire church and out the back doors and in what they called back then the narthex, which is a lobby, and then in the outside doors, because he was a friend to many.
Yeah.
So that legacy was important to me.
Yeah.
And I also have said to my daughters and asked the Lord, when I get to heaven and you girls make it there too, long time from now, okay, I want to be the one to introduce you to my daddy because he's well worth knowing.
Pardon me while I wipe my tears. I was just thinking about Lauren. Even we were with her before we started this, and she gets teary knowing that she was named after such an incredible man. And so I think you've done a great job of carrying his legacy and sharing the epitome of that phrase that stuck with you that day and has continued to kind of mark the way you remember your dad, not mistaking the man for the moment. So there's a lot more to say, and you've said it in your book. Tell us how our friends can get their hands on it. And then also, are there any other resources, or can we fill the show notes with other resources for someone who needs to know more?
Absolutely, Julie. We'll put resources in the show notes for information that you may want to access now. But my book, along with four others, including yours on marriage, that a few episodes from now we will chat about, those will be released late summer, early fall. And if you'd like to have information on when they are coming, sign up for our email list and you'll receive all kinds of goodies, including those. Again, this is taking a woman's journey. And if any of these books apply to your life when, you know, you find them online, here's what they are. I will tell my story. The writer will tell their story. Then we want you to write your story.
Yeah.
I will put in my problems, my challenges, and we want you to write yours. Mm-hmm. I will put in the steps I took to get past them. You will do as well. It is interactive because our goal is for, as we tell our story and our hurts and our healings, you will find a way to find yours as well.
So it's almost like a workbook. It's a book, but it's also a workbook. I love that. I think that really lines up with our desire here is to be very practical and hands-on, and you can do this. I've done this. Let me show you the way. So thank you for being willing to write this down, to share this with your words and with your heart. I respect you and I applaud you for being willing to do this, Dar.
Thank you, Julie.
Do you want to read that Bible verse that you've put in here? I think it's so beautiful as a way to close this episode.
I do. John 16:22. So you have sorrow now, but I will see you again. Then you will rejoice, and no one can rob you of that joy.
Well, I think that is a beautiful way to end the episode. I want to remind you to go to the show notes to get your hands on the other resources we'll put in there for this hard topic, but also to get your copy of Dar's book and check out the other topics covered in our new series, Smart Living in Small Bites. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of This Grit and Grace Life. Make sure you've subscribed and rated and reviewed the show so more friends can find us. You can also share about this episode on your social media or send it to a friend you think it could help. You can find everything we talked about in this episode on our website, gritandgracelife.com, where you'll also find plenty of other articles from other women answering questions you may have.